All right, everybody, I'm going to go ahead and get started with our introductions while we try to get our final speaker up here. Welcome, everyone, as always, to our panel today. We'll be focusing on tariffs, trade, Trump policy, and reshoring. This panel is sponsored by Tama ETFs, who manage the American Reshoring ETF, ticker RSHO, among many other funds. I'm going to pin a post up here at the top that'll outline a lot of the topics we'll be talking about today in article format with a lot of good data and statistics to go along with it. So be sure to check that out. Those of you who have attended our spaces before know that I love to keep these panels wide open for discussion. So as we go along, panelists, I think I've had all of you guys here before. Feel free to chime in. The only request I have is that microphones remain muted when others are talking so we can avoid any kind of feedback or overlap. Now, a little bit of a disclaimer here right at the top. As we will be discussing individual investments, it's important to note that each of your individual circumstances are different, so you need to make sure that you read about each investment carefully to make sure that it fits your risk and return profile. Also note that nothing in this space should be construed as direct actionable financial advice or solicitation to buy or sell any security or derivatives. Always conduct your own research or discuss with your licensed financial advisor before making any given investment. So let's dive right into the introductions here, folks. First up, love having him here. We've got Yuri Kojamirian, the CIO of today's sponsor, Tama ETFs. He's got over a decade of experience managing UK and global portfolios and co-managed the Magity Fund, raising several billion dollars in assets. In previous panels, I bring it up every time because it is worth saying every time, Yuri not only comes in with Tama ETFs to sponsor these, he also participates directly, and his feedback is crucial to these discussions. Welcome back, Yuri.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Next, we've got Marko Bjegovic back, the founder and CEO of Arkamina Research, where he provides in-depth research on U.S. macroeconomics and markets as a whole. Marko has nearly two decades of experience working in the markets as an equity broker, investment advisor, manager, even as chief bank macroeconomist. Marco's forecasts and analysis help educate and inform investors the world abroad, and we're happy to have him back. Welcome, Marko.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here again.
Next, we've got Adam Ozimek, the chief economist at Economic Innovation Group, serving as the executive team and leading an ever-growing font of research. He's also served as chief economist at Upwork and senior economist at Moody's, and his research has been cited nearly everywhere, from Wall Street Journal to the New York Times.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. Always glad to be here.
And next, we've got Andy Constant back. Over three decades of investment in global markets experience, honing his expertise in macro investing. He's worked as idea generator at Bridgewater and chief strategist at Brevan Howard. And he also, also started two funds specializing in multi-asset volatility and capital structure arbitrage. And he's currently the founder, CEO, and CIO of Damped Spring Advisors. Really excited to have you back here to give us your takes. Andy, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's go ahead and dive right into the fray, folks. I'm going to start with you here, Yuri, to kind of start us off here. Trump's announcement that tariffs on Canada and Mexico may start as early as Tuesday of this week has raised concerns for companies across the United States with our trade allies, which we'll touch on later as well. But first, there's also been a fair share of volatility in equities as a whole. It kind of appears that uncertainty causes sharp intraday moves in either direction, though trending down overall over the last few weeks here. Anytime a new detail regarding these plans hit the wire. So Yuri, how are folks at Tama ETFs kind of navigating this current seemingly intraday volatile market? And how can investors at large intelligently strategize some defense should it be necessary?
Oh, that's a lot of things to cover and think about as people sort of enter the stage. I think maybe if we just sort of, in investing, I think what often gets not talked about enough is where we've sort of come from and the starting point. I was just looking at some numbers, but effectively, if you look at the way the market and specific parts of the equity market reacted to the election of President Trump, there was a lot of euphoria, especially in some of the smaller mid-cap companies, certainly also in the industrials and reshoring space that we look at carefully. And a lot of the times the market tries to predict, you know, vote or in the short run, what it thinks will happen. And if you look at today, a lot of those gains have actually been given up. Quite a bit of that is the beat of the market. You know, the market has been a bit soggier in certain parts, certainly in the smaller and mid-cap space. But I think there's a reality assessment where maybe some of the excitement has come out of the market in terms of understanding, hey, is this genuinely going to be, what are these policies going to look like? And the market narrative, certainly over the last week or two, has maybe switched to thinking uncertainty bad versus uncertainty, oh, we just don't know whether these great policies are going to be implemented, which was kind of the view into November and December. I think that's a great starting point because in a way you're starting from neutral and thinking about how some of these policies and how some of this will impact the stocks rather than having to start from a point where people expect the best. If you look at particularly the reshoring space, we've certainly seen that a bit to a certain extent. Now, none of these moves have been particularly violent in that space, but I would say that in certain stocks, you can clearly see that they've pretty much come back to the levels they were in November. And that's a great starting point because most of the analysis that we read, but inside all of this uncertainty, the one constant seems to be that businesses want to build manufacturing in the US. They've been wanting to do that for a while. They were pushed by subsidies from the Biden administration and the passage of these major acts in 2022 and onwards. And now under this the new Trump policies in terms of tariffs, really the one constant continues to be building more manufacturing capacity in the US and forcing companies using all of these policies to do that. And one of the interesting things, and I try to think whether there's a time in history where we've seen this before, is having the confluence of these two factors together. The subsidies continue in terms of the IIJA, IRA, whatever form they might look at, or CHIPS Act, plus the tariffs as well. And the companies are telling us they're going to do that. And uncertainty has this funny effect on investment, especially when the uncertainty is directed very clearly at there's a way to alleviate that uncertainty, and that is to build manufacturing. So I think any self-serving executive is probably thinking incremental manufacturing capacity should be short-term built in the US. And that's where we've positioned our funds. I think if you layer on top of that, one other point, which is a key part of how we think about the markets, is if you're investing in good quality businesses that aren't just exposed to a thematic, but also are genuinely good businesses, that in the tough times they invest in their business and their people and try to take advantage of the situation and gain market share, then you already also have a good kind of extra layer on top of what you're looking at in the equity market. So, well, to summarize that, we see this current situation as there's still quite a lot of uncertainty. The one constant in all of this tariff talk is reshoring. That's a good place to be. And if you're also investing in quality businesses, that's an even better place to be.
Thank you, Yuri. Does anybody have anything to tag on to what Yuri said there before I kind of spin off to something he said at the end there? So I want to tickle that topic a little bit of how tariffs relate to manufacturing domestically. So one tariff that's being imposed is that on steel and aluminum imports, with the goal of protecting U.S. producers and reducing the trade deficit. However, these tariffs have led to higher costs for industries that rely on the materials as inputs for manufacturing, and we saw this in 2018 as well with the tariffs on China. How can small to mid-sized manufacturers in the U.S. deal with these higher input costs caused by import tariffs on steel and aluminum? And how does today compare to the tariffs that were placed on China in similar fashion during Trump's first term? Andy, could you kindly take this one away for us?
Sure. At that level of detail, I'm not going to be that much helpful. I think it's important to step back and just say what is trying to be accomplished, what is the Trump agenda? And they actually issued a report this morning that described the Trump agenda for trade. It's worth a read. It's 250 pages, but you know, to briefly summarize, there's no surprise there. The agenda for the Trump administration is to completely reshape global trade. And in doing that, they're going to use every means they appear to have decided to use every means necessary. And the benefit of shifting global trade is one that's quite clear. And they state this fairly explicitly. Their goal, and I think I mentioned this the last time I was on about tariffs, their goal is to increase GDP share in the United States for production, manufacturing. And to do that, you institute tariffs and you change trade deals such that your productive capacity is more interesting to domestic consumers and global consumers, and so you shift to more production. Unfortunately, the only way that can happen, unless GDP somehow miraculously grows, is that that comes at the share of consumption. And so the Trump agenda, as it's outlined in their own report and yet to be implemented, is very clear a hit to consumption in the United States and a boost to manufacturing. And so the question is, how are all those things timed? Is there competitive capacity that can be built for this additional production? Are there workers that can be hired to staff the more productive assets? Because initially it's going to be a hit to consumption, and it's going to be a hit to consumption through a change in the price level. And so that's the way I look at things right now. And it seems to me that it's uncertain whether Trump will, it's clear what his agenda is. It's uncertain about his tactics. And so we'll find out if he's going to actually institute tariffs in the, you know, either later today or tomorrow, and then on April 2nd.
Thank you, Andy. Does anyone have anything to add to what Andy said? Go ahead, Adam.
You know that I would, Nicholas. So I think that it is an inaccurate description of the economic effects of tariffs to say that tariffs sort of mechanically raise or necessarily raise the share of the economy that's going into manufacturing. Okay? It's just, this is not, it doesn't make sense that that would be the case. You have to look at who are the tariffs tariffing and who benefits from them downstream. It's also not the case that tariffs are necessarily going to increase more onshoring either. I think we need a lot more nuance and understanding how tariffs work. We have far more manufacturing workers in this economy, for example, who use steel than who make steel. And so if you jack the price of steel up, you might add a few steel jobs, but you can just as easily, and empirically has been the case, lose way more manufacturing jobs that use steel. So the world is complex, especially when we're talking about globally competitive industries. It could also be the case that if you're thinking about onshoring to the US economy, well, that's going to be a problem if your production depends on inputs from China, and frankly, even from Mexico and Canada at this point. So if you are a manufacturing company that exists in a global value chain that uses imports from all over the world to produce something, perhaps at the cutting edge of technology in the U.S., you have to look at these tariffs not necessarily as a reason to bring production to the U.S., but it could just as easily be a reason why not to produce in the U.S. So you really can't use these sort of simple rules of thumb that tariffs mean more onshoring, tariffs mean more manufacturing. Very easy, very, very easy for these things to be counterproductive, especially when you're targeting key inputs like aluminum and steel, as the Trump administration is.
Thank you, Adam. Marco or Yuri, anything to add to that before I move along?
No, look, I think. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've already spoken. Yeah. Marco, please.
Actually, I agree with both Adam and Andy. I think the negative effect of tariffs will actually be lower consumption, or at least decreased consumption growth, and that would probably translate into something like if you have lower consumption, it's just a matter of time before you actually get to lower manufacturing, because there is no point in manufacturing all of the products if they are not sold. Will the tariffs work? It's a complex issue. It's not like that we can answer it just by simple yes or no. I think we'll really need to see what effects are dominating after everything is actually implemented. We at this point still don't know what is going to be implemented, what is not going to be implemented. For example, tariffs are supposed to get implemented tomorrow, but maybe we get something like a last minute announcement that there will be no tariffs for Mexico and Canada, like we had a month ago. We just don't know what is going to happen. So actually it's more like, I don't know, we really need to see what is going to happen before we can actually understand the effects of it.
Thank you, Marco. Yuri, what were you going to add to that one as well?
No, look, I agree with all the speakers. I think it's quite clear that we don't know and what the effect of tariffs is. The supply chains are still continue to be very, very complicated. I guess my point was that the incremental decision, I mean, even by manufacturers that would never really consider manufacturing in the US, is to at least think about whether to place incremental capacity there. Now, interestingly, I was reading an interview with I think they're called Shark Ninja, and they manufacture kinds of kitchen appliances. And they were saying, you know, there's no way we could ever build manufacturing in the US. It's just not the supply and industrial base that we need. But equally, people used to say that about solar manufacturing. And if you look at manufacturing of solar cells in America, it's incredible what has happened. A lot of that has been due to subsidies. And I think my point is that we do also have, and let's not forget, a concerted industrial policy in the US, which has never really existed, along key future manufacturing industries, whether they're solar panels, semiconductors, where there is a real effort to try to invest in these industries and build them up, both in terms of people and training and understanding their supply chains and working with foreign partners and investors as well, to just bring that capacity and the entire supply chain together into the US itself. And so I think the answer is, are there examples of where these kinds of policies and industrial policy, maybe coupled with tariff policy, has worked? I mean, yeah, there are plenty. And one of them is the solar panel manufacturing. Remember, there were tariffs implemented under the Trump administration. Then there were further tariffs implemented just at the end of last year under the Biden administration. And this industry has flourished and is becoming globally competitive. And it's quite interesting that that's been able to exist. And similarly with the leading edge semiconductor manufacturing, the jury's still out whether that's going to work, but it's a real effort. I think the numbers involved are probably still too small, but it is an effort to build up this sort of manufacturing base in the US. So I'm not saying that all industries and all supply chains can be moved. I'm just saying the incremental capacity in the face of these tariffs bolstered by industrial policy is to build manufacturing capacity in the US.
Thank you, Yuri. So I want to touch a little bit on that topic. A couple of speakers brought it up there on consumption, especially from my point of view here. I want to talk about consumer spending in general. So the implementation of these tariffs has already led to increased costs for various consumer goods. For instance, just back to that consumption discussion, the Tax Foundation has already found some evidence of this, and they've estimated that the new 10% tariff on Chinese imports would add approximately $172 to the annual tax burden per U.S. household. Now, naturally, this sort of situation would disproportionately affect lower-income households, and that seems to kind of reflect in consumer spending as well, like I was saying. According to Moody's Analytics, nearly half of all U.S. consumer spending is now done by just the top 10% of U.S. earners. Now, with these tariffs and potentially ever-rising costs of goods, is there an expectation for this metric to rise? And if so, how can lower-income families, investors, prepare themselves in the event that consumer goods continue to rise in price? Let's go, Marco, and then I want to kick this one around the panel.
Yeah, I think actually this will be This will be the exact thing that I was talking about on some of our earlier Twitter spaces. And this is that tariffs will likely increase prices, but they likely won't increase inflation. This means that people are going to pay higher prices. Price levels are going up, obviously, as a result of these tariffs. But I don't think that the overall inflation, like the change in prices, will be constant like that. That it will happen month after month, unless, I don't know, something like this happens, like Trump announced 10% Chinese tariffs last month, and now he announced another 10%. He was talking about 60% overall. I don't know what that means. Maybe he will just have 6 months of 10% or something like that. But even after these 6 months, actually, there will be no more increases in prices. So even if we have something like temporary inflation, it will likely be just temporary. Like it cannot sustain unless he really thinks to raise tariffs month after month into perpetuity. Like it's, I don't know, this probably won't happen, but I don't know, today we cannot exclude anything. So actually everything is like at least some tail risk. And consumers, when they see higher prices, they will likely either they will not buy these products, or they will substitute them with something else. Even if they buy the products that cost more, this will actually mean that quantities will be less. And in the end, I think that manufacturing will actually go down. This is how I see things. Although these tariffs are supposed to increase domestic manufacturing and increase the jobs and so on, I don't know. I'm not really sure that this will be the end result of that. And if they there is, of course, if they cannot buy these products, it is also possible that they will say, okay, we'll just refrain from buying some, I don't know, group of products. We'll not use them anymore. We are just going to focus on some other group of products. This could, in the end, actually limit total consumption. And if that happens, then obviously we would have a growth problem there. So this is something that I think could happen in the future. We will see, of course, because we don't know. Maybe these tariffs will be here, I don't know, for a month or two, and then Trump will come and say, okay, we worked all of our issues and we decided to lower the tariffs, for example. We don't know what is going to happen, but if we just assume that he's going to introduce these tariffs and that these tariffs are going to stay here for, I don't know, a year or two or more, this will probably hurt the economic growth.
But kind of on that note of economic growth, the quarter one GDP now forecast has actually just dropped from -1.5% to -2.8%. Do you think that that's pretty tied up in the preemptive analysis of what the tariffs might bring?
Yeah, I think. Well, actually, I haven't seen the breakdown of components yet. But for what I've seen for the previous estimate, it was Friday, I think. It was actually the consumption was still positive. At least they think that consumption contribution is still positive. And all negativity actually came from the net exports, which means that it is actually the effect of imports. Companies are have increased their buying in anticipation of tariffs. So actually they're trying to increase their inventories just to get advantage of the prices that are still here before these tariffs are introduced. This means that after these tariffs are going to be introduced, actually imports will likely drop. This is not like a normal level of imports. This is just a temporary activity. But what I'm more interested in is what this will mean for consumption. And so far we've seen that the Atlanta Fed has actually cut in half more or less their estimates for consumption, for personal consumption contribution. We'll see. I don't know for the latest estimate, because I haven't had time to check that out yet. But if it's something like that, I'm just assuming that they actually think that it's that this negativity is going to come more from net exports than from consumption at this point. But we will see. This is like a transition phase, because Q1 is like you have January, which didn't have tariffs. Then you have February that only had Chinese tariffs on Chinese goods, and then in March we are supposed to get additional tariffs for Mexico and Canada. We'll see whether that will actually get implemented tomorrow. But assuming that it does, actually it's more like you have like three months that are all different. Like the first month there are no tariffs, and you probably have more like increased imports. The second month you have just a smaller amount of tariffs that are included. So maybe imports drop a bit, but maybe not by a lot. And then you have the third month when you get more tariffs. Maybe we see more meaningful drop in imports then. But as we move forward, I will actually assume that imports will be lower, of course, because once the tariffs are introduced, then there is no point in maintaining that level of imports. And this is one thing. And the other thing is probably we're going to see consumption drop. By how much? I don't know. We'll just need to see how things play out. Because as I said, we still don't know which tariffs are going to be used and which are not going to be used, because we'll need a few more weeks and months to figure all that out.
Why did GDP now fall to -2.8%? That's a pretty straightforward issue. There's something very wonky going on. The classification of gold imports that topping up the COMEX with imported gold is significantly causing a big move in the GDP now, which will revert completely when, frankly, Atlanta gets its act together, because they're screwing up the calculation. And secondly, there is a front running of imports that's going on that is causing imports to come in, which is negative for growth, while exports have yet to be reported, and that should revert. And third, we're getting a growth slowdown. And so some of the drop, not 4.5%, or 5%, like it's dropped in the last 2 weeks, 3 days, is actual growth slowing down. And you saw that in the ISM numbers, which did contribute to the drop today. So add it all up, the economy's slowing and the GDP now forecast is absolute garbage at the moment.
So on that note, if you could expound a little bit on that comment about the calculation being screwed up.
Yeah, so when you import stuff, it gets counted. And the more you import, the lower your GDP is, because it's based on net exports. The formula is net exports. There's been significant importation of not goods, of gold. And when the GDP is actually calculated correctly, and it will be in the actual GDP, those gold imports will be described as will come out of the trade account and go into the financial account, and will become will no longer be considered as imports in the GDP. So it's just because they're classifying gold imports inaccurately.
Thank you, Andy. So I want to go a little bit more on this concept of the potential of increased production. So how, from your point of view, I'm going to start with Adam and then kick it to Yuri here. How are Trump's proposed tariffs really expected to influence these domestic reshoring activities? And what potential challenges could arise from increased production costs? Because experts do suggest that although reshoring may be encouraged by tariffs, they may also lead to those higher production costs we touched on earlier.
Yeah, that's the question we have to be asking. I think that like the most coherent and strongest case one can make for tariffs involves things like infant industry type arguments. We've got this young industry that's really burgeoning, and whichever country sort of grabs production there first, then in the long run, they're going to hold on to that industry. So it's this short-term case for tariffs. You can make other arguments about like trying to, different, what economists would call multiple equilibrium. Different outcomes are possible under market conditions when it comes to like larger supply chains. We're trying to get a whole bunch of pieces of the supply chain over here, and we want to coordinate that with tariffs. A third argument would be around select national security relevant policies, and in particular in coordination with other industrial policy, as one of the other speakers commented, for example, semiconductors. Importantly, each of these sort of technocratic cases for tariffs requires technocratically setting tariffs. They require integrating them smartly with a broader strategy. I would not describe threatening Canada, our ally, with whom most of our trade deficit is related to oil. I would not regard threatening them with 25% tariffs unless they become the 51st state as the kind of smart technocratic policy that's likely to be complementary to industrial policy and push the capacity and productivity frontier outward. Similarly, with respect to Mexico, and you can say, well, that's about fentanyl at the border. Okay, maybe it is, but then that's not about some sort of global industrial capacity strategy. Okay, so that's kind of what's missing. You have this sort of incoherent tossing around of tariffs on friends, on allies. And you saw this in the past with China, when Trump's previous negotiations with China, where they brokered, what was supposed to be a deal that didn't end up getting followed through on. It got interrupted by the pandemic, among other things. But one of Trump's big asks of China was that they import more soybeans. Like, this is not industrial strategy making at the highest levels we're talking about here. This is like very crude mercantilism. This is very crude combat with foes and allies alike. So I think that the smart case for tariffs, to the extent that there is one, is really about putting it inside of a broader reindustrializing strategy that's mutually supportive. And you could look at things like semiconductors as areas where we have a sort of broader strategy on these type of things, but that's just not the case with industry broadly. It's not a smart way to do it, especially if you're talking about targeting industries like, for example, steel, which have had protectionism for like 100 years. And the main problem there is that a lot of our producers are simply not productively competitive. And why are they not productively competitive? Because they've been shielded from global competition for 100 years. And so now you're going to be raising the cost of steel, which harms all these downstream producers, every single company that uses steel. It's not a smart industrial capacity strategy. It's just more of the same crude protectionism that got us nowhere. And at the same time, we're blocking the investment of Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel, which could potentially help revitalize that sector. So these are the questions you need to ask. Are the tariffs part of a bigger strategy? What is actually trying to be accomplished here? And is this the path to doing it? Or is it sort of a kind of incoherent attack on allies and foes alike, just demanding high-profile kind of payouts that can be celebrated by the administration as representing success? I think mostly what we're seeing is the latter. I don't think this is going to end well to the extent that they exist at all, the intellectual arguments for protectionism.
Thank you, Adam. Yuri, I'd love your thoughts here as well. How are companies like those that RSHO invests in, like Applied Industrial Technologies, Emerson, how are they kind of preparing for these prospective tariffs?
I agree with Adam. I think it's obviously not that simple to institute a successful industrial policy, especially one coupled with protectionism. And I kind of agree the first salvos or shots in this particular trade war have been quite blunt as tools. I think I do often, when thinking about some of these macroeconomic implications, do go back to what you said, which is just we go and listen to what the companies are saying. I'll give you what these businesses have said to us. I think the first thing is most of these companies, they are well prepared for tariffs. And when I say well prepared, is this isn't the first time they've experienced haphazard protectionism in the U.S., obviously under the first Trump administration, but also I should mention, it's not just political, it's also under the Biden administration. A lot of the tariffs that were introduced under Trump's first term were extended under Biden, and new ones were introduced as well. In fact, the U.S. has taken a protectionist term, I would say some people estimate 15 years ago. And so the companies tell us, look, we've been laboring under tariffs. A lot of the businesses have pursued what's called a local for local strategy already. Now, many of them will just say this and say we're prepared for this, but I do believe that some of the major ones, especially in the industrial focused areas, have actually built up manufacturing capacity in the U.S., have built up supply chains for suppliers over there, etc. And that's why we take so much comfort in knowing the reshoring trend will continue, because we're seeing companies doing it day in, day out. They see the advantages there. And the reason for it is that the driving force is not just the tariffs. There's also all kinds of disruptions that have happened to supply chains that have basically increased the risk of having a very global supply chain. Now, I agree with you that you can't go overnight, because a lot of especially what Adam's really saying is that there's just a lot of intermediate goods that go into the U.S. In fact, the main thing the U.S. imports is intermediate goods, which then get converted to other types of manufacturing output. And so there needs to be a more targeted approach to this. But I do think that these policies all add the incremental point to a management team of a company and certainly a board of a company, that you need to be thinking about how you orient your supply chain. And it's actually redrawing a lot of the lines of what companies see as the right way to push forward and what investors should be thinking about, where the right geographic lines are. Like, what is a U.S. company? What is an international company? It's surely you should be looking at the manufacturing base, which is actually quite difficult as an investor to discern. And so a lot of the reshoring companies, they're preparing for the tariffs. They know how to deal with them. They've been investing for many years, in some cases a decade, to try to position themselves for what they thought was a world that was just going to become more uncertain from a supply chain perspective. And they've been proven right. And I think the ones that haven't done it are going to get a lot of pressure to do it. whether economically this is going to work out, I think companies ultimately do make economic decisions. And this is where industrial policy needs to be focused. It needs to focus on really understanding what is the right way to build up industries from scratch. And there I'm encouraged, and there's some great articles written on this, by examples of industries that have really stagnated and then suddenly have built up over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And it shows to me that there is capacity in the US industrial base to rebuild. And that, I think, is a question mark that many people still have in their heads. They still think that the US is unable to build manufacturing capacity. Now, if you go up to the macro level, I agree, there are uncertainties about how this all gets implemented, how it impacts consumption, how this suppresses consumption versus industrial production. Are we actually going to become a mercantilist country just like Germany and China are? And what does that mean for broader macroeconomic variables? But ultimately, when we're thinking about the investments, we're thinking, what are the companies doing on the ground? Well, they're telling us they're preparing for tariffs and they're investing in US manufacturing and they're pushing their suppliers and industrial bases to build that manufacturing capacity. And we're investing in the companies that are all helping them build that and benefiting from that extra activity in the US.
So as kind of like a really quick follow-up here, Yuri, on what you said about you do think that that capacity is there to rebuild in the United States, I'm curious, would you say then, is the U.S. capable of kind of recapturing lost market share built up over, you know, decades and decades of offshoring, transporting production to different various countries around the world for cheaper production costs? Will kind of tariffs and or reshoring initiatives be enough? And if so or if not, what will it take to revitalize U.S. production in this regard of dragging back production that's been in, you know, recent decades, dating back all the way, you know, maybe even to the 50s and 60s in some instances? Will the U.S. be able to claw back that production?
I mean, it's a difficult question, and almost you want to be thinking about it on different levels. I think in certain industries, for certain areas, the U.S. will be able to do it. And encouragingly, and I think what was, I guess, clever about the industrial policy that was passed under these three major acts is it was very focused on future-proofed industries. So we're not talking about industries that, you know, the U.S. is not trying to regain market share in manufacturing of bad products. And that's where I agree with Adam, you know, going for steel is probably looking backwards, right? That battle was lost to the Korean and Chinese steelmakers probably 20, 30 years ago. And the focus should be on future-proofed industries. The other element that most of the companies we talk to is floating around is kind of the ability to automate, right, production. And so if you think about the way, like we do a lot of analysis looking at total cost of ownership of building manufacturing plants in America versus other places, like if you start to look to the future in terms of potential cost savings from automation, some of these plants start to look very competitive once you account for the risks of supply chain. But it is far from a simple answer. And that's why you have to be very targeted in your approach, right? You can't just invest in, I think taking an overall bet that the US will be able to rebuild a manufacturing production across everything, that's a very, very tough bet, because there's going to be puts and takes in terms of intermediate goods, how the supply chains get built up. But I think in certain industries and certain ways of doing things, there is going to be that. And certainly the US is going to give it a proper go. And if you look at manufacturing construction data, it's gone parabolic, and it's recently maybe topped off a bit, but it's across different industries, particularly within some of these future-proofed industries, chemicals, solar panels, chip manufacturing, consumer electronics, etc. That, I think, are going to be the areas to think about and focus on. And I think, Andy, you've got picked up your hand, so maybe pass it to you.
Sure. So I'm hearing a lot of ideology, starting with Adam's ideology that tariffs aren't really likely to work in this country. And if they were to work, it would be extremely complicated. And Trump is doing a lousy job and he's doing it stupidly. Listen, I don't have an ideology politically, but it seems clear that there's a political ideology toward that. On the other hand, and I think that ideology does a disservice because to your listeners, because it's happening. The Trump administration has an agenda. The agenda couldn't be more clear. And their goal, not their tactic, their goal is to increase manufacturing in the United States, full stop. Anyone who says differently isn't reading what they're saying or doesn't believe it. That's possible. But their agenda is to do that. And so now the question is tactics. And so the big point isn't that one should do it better or one could do it better or some ideological choosing of industries that would somehow, where you, the speaker, believes that you have a better insight into the industries that the United States would best be investing in, and there should be a political choice to make those investments, versus Trump's goal, which is he's going to tariff the hell out of people. It's going to raise revenues for that offset the deficit, and he's going to not particularly care as long as his goal is achieved, which is more manufacturing jobs in the United States. So the important thing, and why it's, I don't think, worth spending much time on about the ideology of tariffs, is to either acknowledge it's happening or have good reason to say why it won't happen. Because I think it's happening. I think the Trump administration is aggressively attempting to achieve their agenda of greater manufacturing jobs. And I also would say it's going to come at the expense of consumption. And that's the big picture. And the ideological stuff is just, that's not what's going to happen. They're not going to have a technocratic solution. They're not going to choose specific industries accurately or more relevantly the way you would. They're going to do a lot of disruption. And we'll see if it's successful in achieving their goal. If it's not successful in achieving their goal, they're going to pivot because their goal is their goal.
Would love to reply to that.
Yeah, please do, Adam.
We already had a Trump administration. I don't know if Andy was asleep or out of the country, but we already had a Trump administration. And in the first Trump administration, manufacturing employment went up by less than total employment. We had tariffs. We had aggressive tariff strategy. And a substantial part of the reason is because those tariffs harmed manufacturing employment more than they helped manufacturing employment. This isn't ideological. There's nothing ideological about this at all. This is what the evidence shows. It's what the data shows. This is what history shows. I encourage everyone to go look up manufacturing employment from 2016 to 2019 right now, and total employment from 2016 to 2019 right now. Look up the data for yourself. We already had Trump already tried to cause this revitalization in manufacturing through tariffs, and it didn't work because and again, back to the ideological point, I already laid out a reason why the best case scenario for tariffs too to work. I explained to everybody exactly what the strongest, most intellectual cases for tariffs are. So I'm being, I think, quite generous to the pro tariff side here. My argument is that that's not even close to what's happening. And so you can say, well, you know, if it doesn't work, they'll pivot. It didn't work. They didn't pivot. Like, we've been here before. It's not ideological to call that out. It's naive to ignore it.
So at the risk of being derailed, really good points on both sides here, but I do want to continue on before we send folks off into their evening. So I want to take us back a little bit to that subject of supply chain disruption. Yuri, and then I want to hear Marco's take as well. Given kind of the slowdown in business activities and policy uncertainties, are we seeing signs of any kind of real economic destabilization? And kind of what indicators investors should be watching as we kind of see what's happening by way of manufacturing moving forward into 2025?
There's certainly perception now in the market very recently that some of this uncertainty could break things. And I think that didn't exist out of the election and into November and December. And as Andy was kind of saying, you sort of, a lot of what they're trying is just implementing these policies and seeing what will work and what won't work. And my slight point to both of the speakers before is that it's the confluence of a lot of these factors together at this point in time that I think is leading us to be very bullish on the reshoring space and have set it up as an investment strategy. And that's because you have both the continuation of these major subsidies that were passed in 2022. These were probably the most targeted, most well thought out industrial policy America has seen, I would say, since the 60s. You combine that with a protectionist turn, and the courage and the goal Andy was talking about to bring manufacturing back to the US and using tariffs as a tool, whether it's a blunt tool or not. On top of that, you also have the businesses themselves. And I think that's really vital. Governments can do a lot to try to influence businesses, but businesses are making those decisions themselves. There's a real underlying private sector driver there. And the businesses really very much are making some of these decisions. Now, of course, there'll be fluff and there'll be political announcements and all of that kind of stuff, but underlying, that's what they're doing. I agree with Andy that there's probably going to be some destabilization of these things, and these will show up in economic statistics. I think unanimously most economists agree that implementing tariffs in this way will probably lead to some weaker economic growth, some uncertainty that will postpone some projects and investment and might hit small business optimism and lead companies to invest less. That's possible, and we're watching carefully whether this uncertainty rises. But equally, you also have a push towards this reindustrialization as a clear objective goal, with a lot of factors pointing that direction. And so what we always say is you want to be in those areas because you're getting that extra lift versus maybe other areas of the industrial space that are more exposed to a weakening economy. And then if you layer on top of that a quality look, and I think that's always important in equities, you want to be looking at quality businesses that have survived through these different cycles and different types of economic policy. Businesses that were around during the first Trump term, they know and they've got that scar tissue of what it's like to manage businesses under this environment. And those are the ones you want to be in versus others. But yeah, we're watching the economic environment quite carefully. I would say that there is uncertainty about the growth outlook, but it existed in 2024 as well. And so it's in this low growth environment where some of these major policies do shine through in a way, because they're adding growth to some of these businesses that previously would have just been either down or flat in this environment. And we're definitely seeing that in the reshoring companies.
Yeah, actually, I would like to say that tariffs are no doubt the disruptive tool. They are going to disrupt the economy. I think the end goal of tariffs is not actually to increase domestic manufacturing, but I think the end goal is and should be that actually using tariffs as a negotiation tool, so that Trump manages to get a sort of environment where all tariffs are actually lowered, or possibly that we get to a place where there are no tariffs. This is probably something that I would consider to be as a win for Trump. If he manages to use all of these tariffs just to make other countries lower their tariffs, and in the end actually have a lower trade barriers, actually that would be a positive thing. This is actually what I think that tariffs are here for, and if he manages to do that, I'm going to applaud it. So
thank you, Marco. So before we head on out, I do want to touch real quick, Yuri, on energy and oil. How should investors, and how are investors in energy companies preparing for potential supply chain disruptions there, especially given the likelihood that higher costs tend to be passed on to the consumer?
Yeah, this is an important point. I think earlier, Adam was talking about this point, right? Some of the intermediate goods that are important to the U.S. are necessary and are not really produced in the U.S. And that's why some of these policies do absolutely need to be thought out in terms of their impact on end businesses. Energy is one of those. The U.S., and I think this is probably one of the most remarkable things that has happened over the last 20 years that maybe everyone in the market and in the world generally underestimates, is how the U.S. has effectively gone from being a massive importer of oil and gas to essentially either flat or net exporter. Now, underlying this, of course, and this is where the complexities of these supply chains come in, is it's not all types of energy, you know, whether it's heavy crude, light crude, or use all kinds of industries that the US is an exporter of. And so we still depend on Canadian oil sand, the oil specifically, the heavier oils that come from there. But more broadly, this, I think, is also one of the reasons why the US is able to go out into the trading world and have this sort of quite confident stance. And one of them is energy self-sufficiency. It's as old as countries, the ability to be able to supply your own energy, especially through oil and gas, which is used in all kinds of industries, is a huge advantage of the United States. And they have the shale oil revolution to thank for that. And it means that the position is much, much stronger than it ever was. Now, I think an important element of the energy aspect is going to also be power and reshoring and rebuilding industry, especially if you're building automated industry that are future-proof. It's going to require a vast amount of electricity. And I'm not even going to start to talk about the AI revolution or electric vehicles or any of those things. And this electrification is going to require a lot of investment as well. And so that will be another area. And the Trump administration has shown that as to be a keen goal as well. Energy, they've called it an energy crisis. There's an executive order signed. Really, the US needs to invest more in generation capacity. And this is where countries like China do beat the US, right? China is able to build nuclear reactors at a blistering pace. And America, for the first time ever in the last 20 years, had two nuclear reactors go live in two consecutive years, which is a real remarkable thing. And that's what I mean. The inflection points are there. And so I think in broadly, energy companies, it's not really a massive part of reshoring because they are well established. They won't necessarily benefit from more industrial activity. But power and electrification, that is a very interesting theme and an area that we've also explored within the Reshoring Fund and in one of our other funds, which is focused on electrification.
Thank you, Yuri. Now, everybody here in the audience, I've already pinned to the top a really good article by Tama ETFs that really dives deeper into how their reshoring ETF is kind of punting into some of these companies with that established presence and established policies to move forward with this concept of reshoring. And of course, if you want to hear and learn anything more about this, definitely check that out. The analysis that's posted on Tama's pages explaining the companies and the ETFs are pretty invaluable. They're very well written, easy to understand. If I can understand them, you certainly can too. Aside from that, Yuri, where else can people learn more about some of the ETF initiatives taking place at Tama? And kind of any closing thoughts here to send people into their afternoons with?
No, first of all, I'd really like to thank all of the speakers for what I think is a very interesting, nuanced debate. I do agree with speakers that you need to keep focused on what the objectives and goals are and really understand. It's kind of what Jeff Bezos, and I've said this before in this forum, used to say, right? Always focus on the things that don't change. What are the constants in all of this changing environment? And we do really think that the reshoring is one of the key constants of the next decade of how a lot of this industrial policy and industrial landscape reshapes. For people who are really interested, look, we put out loads of interesting information on our website, www.temaetfs.com. And if you go to the insights page, there's articles. We write about reshoring quite regularly. We've got another piece coming out very soon. We just put out one on the impact of tariffs and reshoring, which is timely for this conversation today. And you can also explore some of our other funds as well. We're trying to invest in areas of the market that are maybe less appreciated. Remember, our reshoring fund launched in 2023 before Trump, before any of these things, where we were just talking to the companies and were telling us that this was happening on the ground and the amount of investment that was going in, both by private equity and the businesses that we invest in. So we're trying to be in areas of the market that are underappreciated, where there's a structural long-term investment story that's unfolding. And we believe that the catalyst is going to come soon within the next 12 to 13 months. So I just recommend people subscribe to our page and just receive regular updates about the articles that we publish. And do check out some of our other funds. As I mentioned, the Electrification Fund, VOLT, is an interesting fund as well. Just to mention again that none of this should be construed as investment advice. Do definitely do your own work and consult your own financial advisor, whether these funds or any of the things that we've talked about are suitable for you, your investments. But again, thank you so much, Nicholas, as usual, the great moderator, rarely gets the credit for great questions and moving things along. And again, anyone interested, please do click on the tweet that's pinned above or check out www.temaetfs.com.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You guys, with all of your breakdowns and your insight, really make my job really easy. A lot of times you guys will already hit on a lot of topics I want to touch, and it just, again, makes my job really easy. So I appreciate that. And as always, I appreciate you actually participating in these too, Yuri. Your feedback is always crucial to these conversations. Thanks again to Adam, Marco, and Andy for lending their expertise and insight with us today as well. If you're not following those folks, please do. A lot of good macro insights from those folks. And of course, as always, thank you to Tama ETFs for sponsoring this panel, making it possible. And Yuri, as always, really appreciated the discussion, man.